Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight, I'm joined by a very special guest. He is one of the hosts of the podcast Bigfoot and Beyond and is best known for the TV show Finding Bigfoot. I am, of course, talking about James Bobo Fay. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Cade. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's a real treat to have you on because I swear I've been watching Finding Bigfoot for a good half of a decade, I reckon. And I'm trying to hold back the fangirl inside of me to not get too excited that I'm talking to the main man from the show.
Well, you'll find out it's nothing to be excited about pretty quick.
Oh man, I would beg to differ, but I have to ask you, like, what got you into the world of the Bigfoot? Because we're kind of talking before we hit record essentially, and you were saying that you're a commercial fisherman before all this, and that really hit home for me because my dad, he used to own a trawler, so he was a fisherman for a good 30 years of my life.
Wow, down in that heat too, that's tough going.
Yeah, well, he would usually go out to the deep seas and do the trawling for a couple of months at a time, and you know, he has some very interesting tales from that kind of life. But what got you from doing that, coming over to, I guess, the mainland to say, and finding Sasquatch, finding Bigfoot?
Well, I've been into Bigfoot since I was 5 years old, like obsessed with it. And I was already, you know, researching and doing stuff. And fishing was always great because I like to surf a lot and I like to go Bigfoot, and were like my two main hobbies. So fishing was perfect because, when the surf, you know, when the swells were hit 20 feet, we wouldn't go out. We couldn't run the bar to get out of the harbor. So if it was 20 feet or bigger, I had the day off. I could surf. It was great. And then we'd make a lot of money real quick, you know, and crab season or whatever, and shrimp, salmon, and tuna. And you know, I never had a job where I had to go like, I'm going to work at this freaking place for 30 years and I get 2 weeks a year off. And I always worked like seasonal gigs, like where there was an end date ahead of me and I could take off and go do something.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's a great lifestyle. It's kind of like the modern day variant of that today would be like miners who go out for 6 weeks, come back for two, and kind of live their best lives in that little period.
Yeah. You know, my buddies are miners out there in Central Oz. And they were trying to get me. They were trying to get me to come down and work. And they're like, "You work 6 months on, 6 months off." Like they were working in those underground city ones, like where you don't even come up above ground for a couple weeks at a time.
Oh yeah, I think that's in Kalgoorlie or something like that, from memory, the way all the houses are just underground because it's basically hot as balls above above the level there.
Yeah. Yep. And I was like, I it's kind of tempting, but I want to spend half my life underground.
Yeah, especially when Australia is so beautiful, you know, you'd spend the other half kind of touring the East Coast looking for yowies and surfing the lovely coast that we have here.
Yeah, Australia is it's the shit. I love that place. I can't believe I haven't been back in like, geez, like 9 years since we were there, I think it was.
Was it that long ago when you did Finding Bigfoot down here?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was like 2013, I think.
You had some pretty good activity when you were here too, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. For me, the best stuff all happened off camera, but we've got, even when we were filming, we got some good stuff, but of course there's always like they're taking a break or something because there was stuff happened when we were filming there. Ray Doherty, I think he was on your show, Ray.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. He sent us up to this spot. It was his research spot that he found, and it was right up. I mean, it was close to civilization. I mean, it was right. You could see house lights and stuff from where we were, like, you know, like less than a kilometer away.
Yeah, it really surprises me how close Yowie activity seems to happen in Australia. And I don't know, if that's the case over in the States, but it almost seems like this type of activity happens in people's backyards here.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think what would surprise people is like the subdivisions that are sticking out in the suburbs that are on the edge of the woods. And there might not be like vast woods behind it, but like, you know, green belts, and you know, maybe they're like they cross some big farms, and then maybe like, you know, and then some more housing, and then, you know, some scattered woods, and then it's like, you know, maybe a couple miles of the main forest. But like, especially up in the Northwest, like Washington State, particularly like around the Seattle suburbs, they'll come in pretty far, like where people are shocked to see them, that they're, you know, they're traveling down little creeks and stuff and green belts and going way in like half mile deep into like neighborhoods, you know, going to like a golf course and picking off deer off the golf course.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, and the thing is, like, these creatures, they're not the soft, cuddly things that I think a lot of people would want them to be. You know, these are gigantic monsters out in the bush that can tear you to bits. It's kind of a terrifying thought to think that these things are coming that close to just normal life.
Well, you guys are different down there. I think you guys are dealing with a more dangerous variety down in Australia. The Yowie, it seems to me to be, you know, much more likely to grab somebody, it seems, from my impression.
I don't know what it is. It's and it could just be the luck of the draw of the people that I get to interview, but the encounters down here, they do seem to be a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more territorial, I guess, to push the individuals out of their domain, so to say. But you know, that's definitely not to say that, you know, these creatures aren't taking people, because I definitely think that's the case here in Australia and even over there in the United States, especially like with David Pilates with his missing 411 and how that kind of, I believe that connects fairly well to the Bigfoot phenomenon over there.
Well, David, he's a buddy of mine. He's personally told me he doesn't even think Sasquatch are responsible for even 5% of the disappearances in his books.
Really?
He's had a total 180 on that. Well, he never said what he thought it was, but what he thinks it is has changed over the years. I think a lot of it's just people's. The whole life is perceptions, like how you perceive things, but yeah, I think they could potentially be dangerous. I think the Yowies are way more likely to grab somebody, but up here, a lot of people say, I barely got out alive. And it's like, dude, if they wanted you, you don't have it. I don't care if you got a, you know, 50 cal machine gun. You're not getting, if they're so fast and they're so strong and so quick and so stealthy that they could just come up and just, bam, grab you so quickly you wouldn't even have a chance.
Yeah, most definitely.
But they seem to be a lot of bark more than bite. I mean, they can bite for sure, but My personal experiences with them, like doing that stuff, is like when they got all crazy on me, is when I just stood there and like talked to them or growled back or beat my chest back, they would just get mad and they would just leave, like sulk off.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems so disconnected from the activity here, because the Australian Yowie doesn't seem to be as vocal as, you know, the Sasquatch over there. It just kind of seems to throw the rocks, shake the trees, and really try to force you out of the location. So that's quite interesting behavior between the two. I don't know if this is the right word, but species of this creature.
Yeah, we definitely noticed some overlaps. The physical description sound a little different down there. Your guys just seem like more like the animal style, whereas we got the ones that a lot of people, we get people reporting the real human type ones, then other ones reporting like the more gorillas, kind of leaning towards more of a gorilla than a man. Whereas your guys seem to be more like gorilla, the gorilla style, like just pure animal. Because I don't think, not too many of the tribes consider them down there to be people, right?
Yeah, and it really depends, because Aboriginal culture, it's so varied across the right. entire like continent of Australia. I think that from memory, there was over 100 different types of languages that break down into the Aboriginal culture. And there's kind of different folklores depending on where you are.
Right.
Where I live, there's a couple of variants of the Yowie. So we have the traditional Yowie, which is like the, you know, the 6 to 10 foot tall type of creature. But there's also an alternative version of it called the Jundjidee, which is
the brown jacks.
Yeah, the brown jacks. Yeah, so they're a lot smaller, a lot more mischievous, and the Aboriginal culture, you know, kind of identifies them as way more dangerous than the larger Yowie, which is so surprising to me.
Yeah, we were at a spot where those things hang out, live, whatever. We were some Aboriginals down there, and these guys were, especially the one guy was really deep, way up there in the Aboriginal religion, like representing the Aboriginal peoples for like international, like indigenous gatherings, that sort of thing, and. This guy was deep into it, and they were scared to death of the brown jacks. I was around them a couple times when the brown jacks were around, and these guys are like big, tough dudes, and they make no, like they don't care like how they appear. Like they're getting the hell out of there as fast as they can.
What does that make you feel like as a Bigfoot researcher? Because, you know, I haven't really heard of anything like this kind of anywhere else around the world. It kind of just seems to be an Australian only kind of creature.
Africa.
Oh, okay.
Something like that, but those seem to be like, I don't even know if they still exist, and they could have been living like just up to maybe a couple hundred years ago or something like that. And there's maybe a few straggler. I know a woman that saw one when she was doing her field studies there for her master's or PhD or whatever. And she saw two of them, a male and a female, come out of the forest. I think she was in Tanzania, I think it was.
Yeah, that's crazy. I just love how this phenomenon is like a worldwide thing. It's in the most obscure places as well, like incredibly landlocked locations like Australia, like New Zealand. They all kind of have their own version of this creature, which really gives a lot of credit to the existence of this thing, because, you know, you could kind of understand someone making up, oh, I saw a Bigfoot, but when you've got people all around the world kind of describing a similar creature, it gives a lot of credence to the existence of these things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
I have to ask, how did the finding Bigfoot situation kind of land in your lap?
It's a little bit of a story. I guess we got a few minutes. Well, I was really into Bigfooting, and I figured out where the Patterson-Gimlin film site was, and people kind of forgot where it was, and a lot of people didn't go out there. A lot of people didn't know where it was, then some Bigfoot shows were coming up here to film and stuff. And I knew this girl. She interned at Skunk Records, which was the band Sublime's label. And she was a intern there in the office. And I was friends with her. And then she got a job doing film and television, working at an agency. And they dealt with a lot of producers too. And they would be talking about, like they'd just be, you know, saying, God, I got this going on. I got to do this TV show. I got to find out someone about Bigfoot. I need to find out where they filmed that famous video in 67. And I was like, so she would, gave my number to a few of those people, and they called, and I'd go out with them, and then just met people. And this guy, John Freitas, he was a district attorney investigator, kind of like, you know, like a cop detective for the county north of me, Del Norte County. And I'm down in Humboldt County, just to the south of him. And I hooked up with him, and then he got on a TV show, and he brought me on there with him. And then I just started getting calls, and they were coming up here to film. They'd call me, and they'd be like, dude, you should be in front of the camera. I'm like, I'm good. I just like going Bigfooting. The whole reason I got into the TV thing aspect of it was I thought, well, we'd have the best equipment that way, because I couldn't afford it. I mean, back then, thermals were so expensive. I mean, it wasn't even that good. And it, I mean, like, stuff that was $70,000 20 years ago is, you know, like $1,000 now.
It's crazy the difference technology is making to the Bigfoot world at the moment, because, like you said, FLIR cameras are making a massive difference to the investigation game.
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys got the best piece going out of down there.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of the footage captured by the AYR team down here?
Oh, I think it's 100%.
It's pretty incredible footage, I think.
I think it's the best footage, thermal footage ever gotten.
Absolutely. I'll definitely agree with you on that, because I know the guys like fairly well. I would call them like really, really good mates of mine. And the story behind it all, it was really just kind of dumb luck that one of the guys who were out there pointed the camera at that direction and captured these things. So it kind of goes to show you could have all the gear and all the expertise, but at the end of the day, sometimes luck is the key contributor to something like this. And that's, like you said, some of the best footage going around today.
And of course, Murphy's Law was a guy that had never held a thermal before, was the guy holding it, clicking through all the color palettes. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
But I understand. I mean, those things are so finicky. And that was him just doing it, but those therms, it just seems like there's a curse with Sasquatch around those things. Or yowies.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely seems to kind of even the playing field when it comes to these creatures, because talking to the AYR guys there, they're a big believer that these things can see infrared light. So
oh, they can.
Yeah, you think that too?
Oh yeah, I'm positive. I mean, I've seen it happen. I mean, I've seen them, the IRs flip on and then just leave.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Not seen, but heard.
It's an interesting type of thing, because, like, it's not unheard of for creatures out there to see an infrared. I think deer can see a bit of the infrared spectrum.
There's a lot.
Yeah. So it's really not out of the realms of reality that this kind of bipedal creature could see that. But yeah, the FLIRs really start to bring that playing field on an even keel, which I think is great. The day that silent FLIR drones become affordable and, I guess, publicly available, I think that's when we're going to see some mind-bending footage.
Yeah, it's coming. I actually know a really good buddy of mine is, he's just got in on this new technology. He was a financier putting together a capital venture whatever group to back this guy who has come up with he's got some patents now for pumping oil out of the ground, and as you pump the oil, it actually refines it. Like, it goes into the, it gets shipped out as gasoline on site, and the all the waste, like, gets pulled, like all that sludge gets, while they're refining, the oil gets shoved back down the same well, whatever, and put back underground, whatever's not used. And they're getting they're getting all these offers. Like, the Prince of Qatar is just over here, like, talking to him about selling it. So he might have just an ungodly amount of money. He said, dude, we're going to find us, we're going to film us some Bigfoots.
That's unreal.
He told me that last night.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you think the world is ready to meet Bigfoot?
Yeah, and yes and no. I think when they find out how big and gnarly they are, I think a lot of people are going to be a lot more scared. And I kind of get it now, like, why governments keep it hush-hush and don't want it discovered, you know, and why the powers that be are keeping it. Because, I mean, at first I was thinking, like, oh, that's no big deal. You know, it's like when the U.S. government released those UFO videos and they said, yeah, there are UFOs or UAPs. I thought this is going to blow people's minds. And it was like a blip on the news, and then no one cared.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that, because to me, that's the biggest story in history right there.
Right. Yeah, but Squatch, I think with the Squatch, it's a lot more immediate. It's like, you know, like, space is space, and those UFOs are out there, whereas for a lot of people, you know, especially in America and in Canada, and I imagine, I don't know if there's as many people that live out in the country down there as where you guys are, but I mean, this whole continent, North America, is filled with people living in the woods, on the edge of the woods. I think a lot of those people are going to be like, I do not want my kids being around these things. I don't want to be around them. You know, like, real, I think it could cause a economic problem, like people leaving the countryside, you know, and wanting to be more in towns and subdivisions. That could, and, you know, the whole recreation thing, I mean, you know, like, backpacking and sport fishing and even hunting, because, I mean, like, a lot of hunters disappear, you know. I don't know. I think it could have a pretty significant impact on the economy.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It was something that was brought up to me by independent filmmaker Attila Caldi, and I kind of asked him this question about a year or so ago, and he was very much along the same lines of you, and basically indicated that if it came out tomorrow that, you know, Yowies and Bigfoot are real, it would just kind of destroy the economy, because, like you said, people will move away from any kind of bush line residences. The national parks would go broke, you know, logging would basically cease to exist, which, you know, depending on what your opinion on that, that's either a good or a bad thing. But for the economy, it would be kind of devastating, because that's essentially taking billions of dollars out of the market, which, you know, destroys it.
Yeah. 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 It'd be pretty consequential, that's for sure. And people are like, oh, then we can protect them. I'm like, dude, their best... I've always felt guilty. I've always felt, you know, like deep down, I'm like, this is wrong. I should leave these things alone. Then the other part of me is like, I can't. I just have to know. I want to see what's up with these things. And then for a long time, my motivation was, I want to film one so Bob Gimlin can go around and tell everyone, you know, like, F you, I was right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in a real no-win situation there, because if it's right, he's spent his entire life kind of defending the fact that he didn't fake this. And I feel for the dude, because I've seen several interviews with him, and he kind of wishes it almost never happened, because it was just kind of something that flipped his life upside down after that.
Yeah, he says he often said he wished it hadn't.
So you're wanting to prove that it's real?
Not really so much now. I mean, I'd like to get some footage. I'm not so worried about proving it real, but I just want to know about them. It's kind of selfish, you know, like if you really care about them, like, you should leave them alone, I guess. But I'm just so fat. It's just how they live, and like just all the details that that like everything we've learned about gorillas and chimpanzees in the last 100 years, like if we could, and that was before, like, you know, like small digital Bluetooth cameras, that sort of, you know, remote cameras. And I think we could, with the proper funding, I mean, I think it's still gonna take a long time to get to know the Squatches. I mean, there's nothing else like them, you know, and that's assuming they're just straight flesh and blood. Even if they're just straight flesh and blood, they're gonna be the most difficult thing to ever study in the wild. And if they're more than flesh and blood, it's gonna be just kind of futile to really do much studying on them, it seems like.
Well, that actually goes to a question that I got from a listener, Sam Gibson, and he wants to get your opinion on it. Like, what do you think they are? Because the stories that I've personally shared on the podcast from listeners are so varied that it's really hard to pinpoint what you think these things are. Because basically, when someone comes on the show, like, I have a great idea. This is exactly what the Yowie is. This is what the Bigfoot is. And then they tell me something, and it kind of does something that is just out of the box. And it's like, well, what could it be then? And I guess his question is, like, what do you think they are? Like, do you think they're flesh and blood? Do you think there's maybe something more to it? Because there is a lot of woo attached to these creatures. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
I know, dude. And I go back and forth. Like, if I'm hanging out like Cliff and Meldrum and them guys, I'll be like, oh yeah, of course these are just flesh and blood. Then, I mean, I've had some weird experiences with them, but nothing I could definitely say was paranormal. But I've had, you know, like what I've perceived to be mind speak, and that could be, you know, the pheromones that they give off, or infrasound could make you hear like your voice, put these messages in your head, like as a form of self-defense, or, you know, like whatever. I don't know, but I've had what I thought were clear communications with them a few times. And then, I know they're super, super like ungodly quick, and can jump incredible distances and heights. I know they got that, you know, like an inch pad fat on the bottom of their foot that makes them go extra quiet. But there's been a few times where they were like right there on the other side of these bushes, and we jumped around in daylight even, and like they're just not there. But you hear them stomping up, breathing hard, like little growling maybe. And then, you know, and we got the video cameras ready, and we walked up, and then we could hear it breathing, like huffing, like 10, 12 feet from us on the other side of this big bush. And we each went to one side of it and then jumped, you know, down there, and nothing was there.
That's got to melt your mind.
It does. It's like, cause you, I understand like a lot of times when people say it just disappeared, they'll drop to the ground and then do like a little spider crab crawl away real fast, or alligator crawl, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause people have seen them going on like, with their belly like an inch off the ground on their fingertips and toe tips, and just scurrying along, like, you know, just hugging the ground and going as fast as like a, you know, a person at a fast, but not sprint, like not a world-class sprinter, but going, you know, like an average person running fast.
What a creepy sight that would be. Just something moving so unnatural like that and just doing it with such ease. It's just terrifying to think of, really.
Yeah, and it's I had a glimpse of one for like a half a second in the daylight down at Bluff Creek, down below the Patterson Gimlin film site, about I think that was 2007 or 2008. And other than that, I mean, I've seen hair, fur, whatever, odd colored, like, you know, glimpsed it in the woods a handful of times, but not that I could say was 100% a Sasquatch. You asked me about What are they? Are they paranormal?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm way open to it. I think there could be other entities, maybe masquerading as Squatches, or maybe they can. This is not some well thought out theory or hypothesis, but maybe these entities even kind of possess them at times. You know, use their bodies to get something that they want here. Because
I've never thought of that.
It could. I don't know. I mean, it could. It's a possibility, like slight possibility. But I mean, I keep hearing these UFO Bigfoot connections, and I'm actually working on a documentary on that right now. But it's hard for me to do that, make that leap, unless all the paranormal is somehow, you know, there's a grand unification theory that comes out somehow, you know, like about parallel universes or whatever, something with quantum physics or whatever it may be, you know, we just don't understand it, but 1,000 years from now it might be well understood. That, I mean, I'm open to all of it, because people I trust really well have told me, you know, things that are straight paranormal. I mean, the aspects of the creatures are, there's a paranormal element to them, but I'm not sure. And it might be like, you know, some of them are like Buddhist monks, you know, like just on this higher plane, like just, you know, like shamans, and the other guys are like, you know, NASCAR, beer drinking, just watching pro wrestling, like that, like, you know what I mean? And like, somewhere on just different levels, like different planes. That's a possibility. Like maybe they can only do it when they get older. Like, cause I never hear any of this paranormal stuff about the young ones, the little ones.
Actually, that's a really good point. It always seems to be the larger mature creatures that seem to do these more woo aspects when it comes to these types of encounters, because you know, I've interviewed people who have claimed that these creatures have basically vanished right in front of them. They would be a handful of meters away from them, crossing a path, and the creature, it to them looks like it just kind of disappears into nothing. And I hear other encounters where, very similar to the one that you're kind of talking about before, where they hear the creature kind of moving around them, stomping, throwing things around, and they almost see like a predator type thing, where you can kind of see this outline of something, but you can't quite make it out. Yeah.
I hear that a lot. You know, I'm finding Bigfoot all the time. We would hear something like a big stump or a boulder being picked up and slammed on the ground. Now I'm thinking it was them jumping out of trees, like big ones jumping from high up in trees. But there was a few times I was with Renee even, where we heard like something like 2 feet approaching us, and we're scanning with the thermite. It's like a meadow, and there's nothing there, like nothing at all.
That's got to be creepy at some point, that you just don't know what you're actually dealing with out there.
Yeah, it gets weird, especially when people start tying it into like dogmen and curses and shapeshifters and skinwalkers. You know, it gets a little hectic.
Have you ever felt genuinely in danger while out, say, filming an expedition for finding Bigfoot?
A little bit, yeah, when we were in Sumatra when the tiger came around, because it killed and ate a tourist like 3 weeks earlier. Grabbed a Japanese guy, crushed his skull, and ran off like in the middle of the group. Just jumped in the middle of the group of 15 people and grabbed the guy by the head and ran off and ate him just like 100 feet off the trail.
Far out.
That was kind of sketchy. And then Renee was driving crazy one night. It was like the remnants of a hurricane we were driving through. And she was literally going like 95 miles an hour on this like bumpy back road. And because Moneymaker drives like a nut job, but he's a good driver. He's a good driver. But Renee, she thinks she's a great driver, but of all three car crashes we had on the show, she was involved in all of them. She was driving.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is.
Because her dad was a famous daredevil guy. Like, you can't call him a stuntman because he didn't think it out too far ahead or plan that great or do safety protocols. But her dad's John Holland. He was a famous motorcycle jumper daredevil. And he's famous for, he wrecked like three cars with his body. He was doing a jump over a bunch of cars, like 15 or 20, I don't know how many cars it was, but he was doing a big jump over cars, and he had a homemade parachute strapped on the back of his back, and it went off when he hit the ramp, the takeoff ramp, and it's considered the worst wipeout ever, I guess. On YouTube, I'm sure there's something worse now, but like when YouTube first started, early web days, it was kind of a viral video. It was a pretty legendary crash. So it runs in her bloodlines.
That's too funny. So you never felt like in danger from like a Bigfoot or anything like that?
A Bigfoot? No, I never. I've never been afraid when there's someone there with me.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously the shows get edited and cut in a way for high attention to. It's just how TV shows work. And was there anything that you wished made it to air?
Oh God, yeah, all the time. Like, dude, well, it got better when the field producers would, you know, take notes, whatever, send it back to the editors, and the editors wouldn't even read the field notes. They wouldn't even know what was going on. They'd kind of just skim through it and do their cookie cutter plug and play, like look for this opening, look for this scene, and just go through real fast. And dude, they left out all kinds of shit. Like, I couldn't believe it. And then I just found out pretty recently, like, that they didn't even really test any of the shit we gave them to test. They just tell us it came back negative.
Oh, that sucks. You know,
yeah, because they were too cheap to pay for any testing. So I was wondering, because they leave stuff out that we got sometimes, or God, what else did they leave? They'd leave out like funny stuff, this young woman at Discovery that was like our liaison. She was the one that oversaw the show, and she was like a super conservative, really mild, very, very like kind of nervous, cautious person, and super sweet and nice and smart and all that, but just she was so deathly afraid of offending anybody with anything that there was some really, really funny shit in there that could possibly offend like a super sensitive person, but who gives a shit? And they cut out a lot of funny stuff, which drove me crazy.
Yeah, I could imagine, like, you're on the road, and I would imagine you're probably on the road for a good 6 months out of the year doing these seasons, if not more. And the cast and crew, because the reality is, like, there's probably a team of like 20 to 30 people that would kind of travel around with you when you're doing this type of thing. And the camaraderie that you'd have with those people would be incredible. And I could just imagine the actual shenanigans that kind of go on while you're out on set, or well, not on set, but on site doing your investigations would lead to some genuinely like good-hearted humor.
Oh yeah, because half of our crew was failed stand-up comics.
Oh.
So yeah, we were super tight. We were truly like we were a road family. We had some of the same guys with us for like 8 years, camera guys. And there was 16 core people on the road all the time. Then we'd pick up a local producer, then a local PA or two, and, you know, for like sorting out foods and, you know, like just to have local people that you're not spinning your wheels. So, but we had, yeah, the core 16 of us on the road, and yeah, we got super tight. Yeah, it was kind of like almost like army buddies. You know, you get through like this super trying, like taxing, like emotionally draining experiences together. Like you're a freshman year in the dorms in college, university, whatever. You know, like those people you get through the first, when you live in the dorms with them, you know, your freshman year in college, you're just tight with them the rest of your life. You know, like you're always got that bond. So we definitely always have that bond.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of like a brothers in arms type of thing, because some of the situations and scenarios that you guys seem to find yourself in seem pretty challenging, like especially weather wise. I don't know how you guys would do it, like just lugging all that equipment around everywhere. because you go pretty deep in some of the places that you go into.
Yeah, because they wouldn't even they'd make it. And the other thing that was weird was they always tried to make it look like we weren't out in the field as much as we were. Like, I didn't understand that. They'd always edit the show like we were only there for like 3-4 days or something. We were there for like 10 days, 11 days.
Were you really? And
a lot of times, yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And then, we filmed a ton of stuff that never made the air. I mean, just they'd hand in at least 150 hours of footage a week minimum. And that was without the FLIRs or anything, or the solo camping footage. And they'd have to, pick 42 minutes out of it that can tell a coherent story.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite parts of the shows used to be the town halls, because I could imagine you'd meet of the most interesting people in those situations.
Town hall is the best. Yeah. You know, what's funny is, like, we'd go out to the bars after or whatever, or a bar. Usually there's only one of those little towns. We'd go out afterwards and everyone would be wanting to talk to us. You know, like, there might be however many people, like 100, 200 people that show up afterwards, find out where we're going. They go there. They're all clamming around to talk to us. And I'm like, you guys are blowing it. You could be talking, those producers and camera guys are the most funniest, coolest. They got way more stories than we got, because they work in the business. They've done like the Great Race in Africa, or shot Nat Geo stuff in Asia, and whatever. Like, they got endless stories, and they're funny, cool guys. I'd be like, you guys are all trying to talk to us. Like, you should definitely be talking to them, like, for your own good.
And I could imagine, like, when you're in that much more relaxed kind of scenario, you probably find people come forward that didn't come forward in those town hall meetings with incredible stories after you've almost had everything lined up.
Guaranteed, 75% to 85% of the time, the best story was one afterwards, where some guy hanging out on the side, or a woman, usually it was a guy, would just be hanging out and, like, approach you and kind of cautiously poke around, and that could tell. It's like, all right, what do you got? Spit it out. I know you got a story. And they tell you, like, well, I didn't want to say it for everyone because they think I'm crazy. And they tell you something like you've heard hundreds of times before, but they're not into it, so they've never heard this before. But to you, it's like, you're like, yeah, I know they do stuff like that. Yeah, it's crazy they do that. It doesn't happen all the time, but it definitely happens. And we'd get some really good stories.
Yeah, because one of the things that I kind of noticed about Finding Bigfoot is, like, they didn't really touch on a lot of the woo elements of the phenomenon, so to say, which for me was always like a bit of a bummer, because speaking to all the people that I've spoken to over the years, it really does make up a large amount of the encounters, but enough for you to really notice that, hey, it's not always just black and white when it comes to these things.
Yeah, Renee always did. I mean, Renee's position the whole time on the show was that they're spirit animals.
Really?
Like, yeah, that was always her scientific take.
That actually surprises me, because, she's put on the show as the skeptic, and that is a view so far disconnected from how they kind of portray that.
Yeah, she had a weird spot, because her job was to represent the viewers at home that were sitting there going, these guys are full of shit. They're not even real.
That's fair. That's fair. And you kind of need that in that kind of scenario.
Yeah. Because when we first started, I was like, what the hell we got here? Like, what are we bringing her for to tell us? Like, we know they're real. We don't need someone here getting in the way saying they're not real. And then I got it after a while. I was like, oh, yeah, she represents the viewers, like all the wives or husbands or boyfriends or girlfriends that are sitting there watching their significant other watch this going, what the hell are you doing? Like, these guys are all nuts. And they go, oh, I can identify with this person because they're saying what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like the voice of reason, because I know I'm so guilty of wanting to jump headfirst and believe, everything that I see is, yep, that's it. They found it. Job's done.
Right. Yeah, it's I would talk about it pretty often, and they just cut it out. They just cut. I talked about it a lot. Talked about it with natives, and like the whole scene wouldn't even make the show at all. And I get it. I mean, if you want science to participate, talking about the woo, you're just defeating your own purpose if you're trying to get mainstream science and resources involved to study them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's hard enough to try to convince people that these things are real, let alone saying, oh, hey, by the way, it disappeared into nothing. And then I saw orbs of light and then there was a UFO overhead. And, you know, these things, they, let alone the monster being real, hardly make sense to people. Going and trying to convince them that you saw all this other stuff that happened at the same time is next to impossible.
The synchronicity to this one, I was going to do my first, I'd been like, you know, Bluff Creek and places where people had seen Bigfoots, like the reports. But this was the first time, it was October 88 or 89. I think it was 89, I'm pretty sure. It was, I was going to school at Humboldt State University. And this guy we knew, LBJ, Larry Bon Jovi, guy from New Jersey, was up fishing on Redwood Creek and outside of Ork, Redwood National Park. You know, it's kind of famous, the Redwoods. And he was fishing steelhead on a right about, you know, probably a half mile up from the ocean mouth. And he was the only guy there in thick fog. And he'd hear the elk come down. And it's they channel the creek. It's called a creek, but it's the size of a river. And it goes, they run these levees through town to keep it from flooding everywhere. And he'd hear the elk. There's a huge elk herd. The world's largest elk herd lives there. And the elk would come down, and he'd hear them coming down the embankment of the levee, hit the water, and he'd hear them surging, you know, like they're, as they're walking into it, and then their chest hitting, and then they'd hear, then it'd go quiet as their hoofs weren't touching. They'd swim to their side, and the current would take them down. Then he'd hear them start surging out of the water again, you know, like the typical sound, like, you know, some anything coming out of the water, just that. He said that he heard something way bigger, like tons of gravel come sliding down the embankment. Heard the water like bloosh, bloosh, like way bigger. And it was on 2 feet. And as he just sat there and watched, and he said it never lost its footing, and it gets to be about 6 foot deep in the middle. And it was after the rains. I mean, there's flow, like there's no way a human could walk across it. Shaquille O'Neal, no way. You just get swept away. I mean, it sweeps away 1,000-pound bull elk, you know, and this thing just charged, like not charged, but just like walked quickly across. And it never lost its footing because he kept hearing it like surging, just like walking. And then he'd hear it kind of coming out. Then he could hear the legs start coming, like, you know, he could tell us. And then he could see it, and it was about an 8.5-footer, four and a half foot broad shoulders. The classic, just, you know, classic Sasquatch, just glanced over at him, gave him a look like, you're just nothing to me. You're just a little fly, and just turned around. And he said, instantly, he said it scoured, it went along the bank, found the elk tracks, and took off tracking the elk.
Fire.
So I was driving up there with these two girls from school. We heard about that day, and I was like, oh man, let's go check it out. Let's go check it out. And she says, all right, I got, when I get done with my class, we'll go up there. And by the time we got going, it was already dark. And so we're driving up there to go to, it's about 40 minutes north of this campus up on the coast. We're driving up. We're about halfway there, maybe. We have this little town called Trinidad. And the girl in the backseat's going, there's a light ship. There's a light ship. And I was like, what? Like, this chick's tripping. And she's like, there's a light ship. And I was looking at it, and my mind couldn't even wrap around. My mind wouldn't even accept what I was seeing. So I understand when people experience that, because I experienced it myself. I was in total denial what I was looking at. And I was like, what? It was a UFO. It was this big kind of cigar shaped, like two thirds white, one third red. And it was just hovering. Then it was flying north a little bit. Then it hovered some more, and it was out over the ocean. And we pulled over on the highway 101 there. We were watching. We could see another guy pulled over about 100 yards in front of us or so, maybe 100 something yards up. There's another vehicle, and I could barely make out from a car's coming from the direction. I could see a guy sitting on the side of his car, like, you know, leaning up against it. And we watched it for about I don't know, 5-10 minutes, and then it flew north again behind the trees. I said, I know the perfect place. There's a state park up there that sticks out in the ocean where we surf up there all the time, and there's a great view of the whole ocean up there. Well, let's go there. Let's go to Patty's. So we jam up there. We watched. We saw eventually 9 UFOs in the sky at once. Just those little blinking balls of light that zip around all weird. We watched them for like 4 hours, 5 hours, and then finally, five Air Force jets, fighter jets, came flying up from the southeast, and they went at them, and you could tell that they had done this 100 times because as soon as they went at those towards the UFOs, it was like they had to be going 50,000 miles an hour. They just shot up so fast, like within literally, like you could see them just disappear, like not blink out, but like just they shot off at such an insane rate of speed, they went out of vision, and that those pilots wasn't even 5 seconds before they were all flipped around heading back where they came from, and the UFOs were all gone.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's an incredible UFO encounter.
Yeah, and also, well, during that whole thing, at one point, there was this bluish green one, more green, because they had pulse colors. They flew super erratic. This one flew more like graceful. It'd be like if there was a mosh pit on ice skates, and there was like one figure skater, like woman out there, like, you know, doing like triple axels, and then the rest of them were like just this herky jerky mass of confusion. And I looked over at the two girls who were sitting there, and I said, "Does that one seem like it's a?" And they both said at the same time. I said, "We all three said a female." And it was like, no way, because it had like this real feminine quality to it, you know? And so the one girl who was really, she was from Sonora. So she knew, she dealt with all of Sonora. She lived up there for the big UFO flap in the previous couple of years that preceded this one where we were at this time. And so she said, okay, we got to sit Indian style with our palms up, our fingers, our thumb tip and forefinger tips, you're like making the okay sign. But so you got your little finger to your middle finger sticking straight out, then your palms up, then your tip of your thumb and tip of your forefinger touching. And she said, sit like that and concentrate. I said, let's tell it, okay, if you're a female, spin in fast, tight circles. So on three, we go, 1, 2, 3. If you're a female, spin in fast, tight circles. If you're a female, and on the second one, it just goes bzzz, and span, just these super tight little fast donuts. It was, yeah.
That is genuinely incredible. Like, that's a sentience connection to this.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. And then this other one started, kind of blinking the same colors as that one. Like the bluish green, like pulsing. And we're not sure which one it ended up being, but one of those two flew over the 101, flew over Big Lagoon. It's this coastal lagoon lake thing that's just north of where we were. It's part of the state park system. And it flew out over the lagoon and then flew over the highway and then turned its like downward lights on bright blue green and stop traffic on the highway. It's one of the two main north-south corridors through California, Oregon, Washington on the West Coast. There's the one right on the coast, which is the 101. There's Highway 5, which is the big commercial one that runs up the middle of the state, like inland, about 50 miles. But this is the one that runs. So it's not heavily trafficked, but there's probably like two cars from one direction and maybe two or three from the other direction that stopped and waited for this thing to fly around and fly away.
It's so hard to fathom that something like this can happen without it almost being like this major, major news story, because with so many people kind of witnessing it, it always blows my mind. It's almost like this event is happening for this handful selected people.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you this, when we were pulled over on the side of the road in Trinidad before we went up to the park. I said, pull up to that guy, pull up to that guy. And so there's a guy sitting in front of us on the side of the road. We pull up, it was a highway patrolman, you know, state trooper. And I was like, and she's like, oh, I don't want to pull up. I said, yeah, don't worry about it. I go, did you call that in? I was all excited going, did you radio that in? Did you tell your supervisors? Did you call the news? And he's like, looking at me like I'm just, you know, just an idiot. He goes, no, and I'm not going to. I said, you have to call the FAA. You know, you got to call in the Air Force. Like, this is nuts, you know? And he just shook his head and just goes, I'm not doing anything of the sort. And he goes, you're blocking traffic. Get going. And then, you know, he took off. But yeah, he just was like, I'm not calling this in.
Oh, man, that sucks. You know, if that happened today, it'd be a completely different story because, you know, it's almost cool to see a UFO in our day and age now.
Yeah, because back then, like, people said, like, you're full of it. But there were, you know what, there was over the next 4 years, and it was in Stan Friedman's books. There was I didn't find this out until much later. Mike Rugg, that runs the Bigfoot Discovery Museum outside of Santa Cruz in Central California, he was a MUFON like regional director for him for a while, whatever, for 15 years. And I was talking about my UFO story, and he just goes, he pulled out this book. He pulled out a couple, like three different books that all had a big chapter on the UFO spate of sightings where I lived at that time. And I was like, no way, because I remember when we'd go to Patrick's Point after that, I mean, there must have been anywhere from 90 to 105 nights subsequent to that over the next 4 years. There's, you know, at least 90 nights I was up there with other people. We watched these things just do these weird, like, it didn't make any sense what they were doing. It was just so random. Like, they just flew around and just, it just seemed like it didn't accomplish anything.
That's really weird. So, like, these things were there over and over and over again for months.
Years.
Years, far out.
Yeah, and it was weird, too, because some people could see him, and we'd go there with the groups, and other people would be like, I don't see anything. Like, they were hypnotized, saying, I don't see anything. I don't see anything. Like I remember one time there was like four people saying, they're all saying the exact same thing. I don't see anything. I don't see anything. There was like this rote, like they were just on autoplay.
You know, that's not uncommon. I've actually experienced something like that myself. Like, me and my brother had this very odd encounter with something in the sky, and I could see it clear as day, and he is just basically right there next to me saying, nah, I can't really see it. And what makes that encounter even kind of weirder for me is that I only remembered that encounter after talking to somebody else who had an encounter similar to that. It's kind of like the memory refreshed in my mind.
Yeah, well, I remembered it the whole time for sure. But, you know, if that girl wasn't going into a light ship, it's a light ship. And me not being able to see it for what it was, I think I would have never even noticed. I think I just would have said it's got to be a plane and not even paid attention, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, James, man, this conversation went in a completely different direction to where I thought it would, and I'm not even complaining about it because I love talking about Bigfoot, I love talking about UFOs, and when those two kind of conversations meet in the middle, I think it's a good day when that happens.
Yeah, you want to hear my crazy UFO story?
Mate, if it gets crazier than that, yes, I do. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.